Okay, so imagine this. You've just ordered something online, right? Expecting it tomorrow. For you, it's almost invisible, that whole process. But what if somewhere between you clicking buy and it landing on your doorstep, thousands of the workers making that speed happen just stopped? That's basically the scene that unfolded in late 2024. A really major labor action hitting a company pretty much everyone uses daily, Amazon. Thousands of their delivery drivers just walked off the job.
Yeah, and as the source material we're digging into today makes really clear, this wasn't just, a simple strike. It's actually a very complex issue. It sits right at the heart of modern labor models, the whole gig economy thing. And frankly, that demand for speed and convenience we've all gotten so used to, it really makes us ask some tough questions about who's actually responsible for workers in these layered systems.
Exactly. And that's our mission for this deep dive. We've gone through the source material you shared, this RSS Inc. article, to try and, cut through the noise. We want to understand why this strike happened, what it really means, and pull out the key insights from the details. Like, what led up to it? What were these drivers actually asking for? And yeah, what does this signal for the future of work and maybe even for us as consumers?
Right. The article gives a really granular look. It gets into the underlying causes, the key players involved, lays out the specific demands the workers had. It also touches on the legal challenges, which are huge here, and crucially brings in some of the human stories, from the people actually doing this work day in, day out. It's a deep look at the dynamics between this giant corporation, Amazon, the smaller third-party contractors they use, and the drivers who are that final last-mile connection.
Okay, so let's unpack this then. It sounds like the core of the issue really is that structure you mentioned. The article points straight away to Amazon's delivery service partner model, the DSP model. Can you walk us through that a bit?
Right. So the DSP model is Amazon's main way of handling that last bit of delivery, getting the package from a local warehouse to your house. Instead of hiring all those drivers directly, Amazon contracts with literally thousands of these smaller independent businesses. Those are the DSPs. And these DSPs, they're the ones who technically hire and employ the drivers. So on paper, a driver works for Bob's Delivery Service, not Amazon.
And this seems like a big but. The source material says it's not nearly that simple in practice.
Oh, absolutely not. It's way more complicated.
Oh.
While the DSP is the formal employer, the RSS Inc. article really highlights Amazon's, well, incredibly deep operational control. Amazon dictates almost everything about the driver's actual workday, the tech they have to use for routing and tracking, the specific routes, the Amazon-branded vans and uniforms, those really aggressive package quotas, and constant performance monitoring. Cameras, apps, you name it. This is what the source calls that gray area, or fissured employment. Basically, the company with all the real control over the work isn't the company that technically signs the paycheck.
And that's the central tension, isn't it? Because Amazon can step back and say, look, they don't work for us, talk to their boss, the DSP. But the drivers are feeling, understandably, like Amazon is the one pulling all the strings, setting the pace, making the rules they live by minute to minute. This dynamic, the article says, is really the battleground that led to the strike.
Precisely, that disconnect between who controls the job and who's the official employer. That's fundamental to understanding this whole thing.
Okay, so you've got this structure, this tension building. What was the specific spark? According to the source, what actually tipped things over into a strike?
Well, the article details a clear lead-up. It wasn't out of the blue. The Teamsters Union had been actively organizing these drivers for months. They were pushing Amazon repeatedly for union recognition, basically saying, you need to acknowledge us as representing these workers and start bargaining.
Right, they wanted a seat at the table and the specific trigger.
According to the RSS Inc. article, the trigger was Amazon refusing to meet a deadline, the Teamsters said, December 15th. That was the date the union said, okay, Amazon, you need to come to the table by this date and start negotiating in good faith.
And when Amazon didn't meet that deadline, the strike kicked off.
That's right, December 19th. The action quickly involved thousands of drivers. The source mentions some warehouse workers joined in too, across various Amazon sites. Now, Amazon's network is massive, obviously, but the article points out the strike was really concentrated in major cities, high delivery areas like New York, Chicago, Atlanta, San Francisco, though the impact, the message was felt more widely.
Okay, so given that background, the structure, the tension, what did the source say the drivers were actually demanding? What were the core issues they walked out over?
The Teamsters laid out a pretty clear set of demands coming directly from the drivers' experiences. The number one priority, absolutely, was union recognition and starting contract negotiations. They wanted that formal voice, a collective way to address their issues.
And beyond just getting recognized, what were the tangible things they wanted changed?
Better pay was huge. The article mentions reports suggesting a lot of drivers made less than $20 an hour, which, when you think about how intense the job is, cost of living in those cities, they felt it just wasn't enough, especially with the pressure during peak season. They also demanded much improved working conditions.
And the source gets pretty specific, almost uncomfortably specific about those conditions, right?
It really does. The article includes driver accounts citing things like just unrealistic delivery quotas. We're talking maybe 300, sometimes even more packages in one shift. And the sheer difficulty of hitting those targets safely, legally. There were lots of reports about not having access to restrooms on their routes.
That's the one that always stands out.
Yeah, forcing drivers into, well, impossible situations. Not enough break time, working really long hours, 10, 12 hours a day, sometimes more, often without proper overtime because of that contractor status. They also wanted job security. DSP drivers could apparently be let go with very little warning, no real recourse, none of the usual employee protections. And finally, health and safety, which ties into the rushing, the long hours, the physical strain.
And the article notes these complaints weren't exactly new, but this strike felt like a major escalation.
Correct. These issues, the quotas, the monitoring, the pay, the conditions have been raised by advocates and organizers for years. But this December strike, as the article details, was different. It was the largest, most visible, most organized collective action from these specific workers they'd seen. It really brought everything to a head nationally.
And the article really tries to drive home the human element here. Beyond the stats and structures, it shares what the drivers themselves were experiencing. What were some of those stories from the picket lines?
Yeah, this is where it gets really stark. The article has some powerful testimonials. Drivers talking about that constant pressure, 10, 12-hour days, having to rush through routes, sometimes routes that weren't safe, leading to injuries. And that detail that just keeps coming up, the detail about drivers sometimes having to, you know, urinate in bottles in their vans because they couldn't find a restroom or didn't have time to stop. It's just a really vivid picture of the pressure.
Yeah. And there's that quote in the article from an Atlanta driver that really sums it up. We're treated like robots with no room for error. If you fall behind, you're out. And yet it's Amazon who controls everything. That captures both the physical and the emotional side of it, doesn't it? Especially during those crazy peak times.
It absolutely does. That quote just perfectly distills that core tension, right? Feeling totally controlled by this huge company.
Yeah.
While knowing that same company says, hey, not our problem, technically. All while the job itself is pushing you physically to the brink.
So thousands of drivers walking out in major cities.
Yeah.
How did Amazon respond? What does the RSS Inc. article say about their reaction?
Well, Amazon put out statements pretty much downplaying the whole thing. They claimed the strike was limited, only a small fraction of their huge network. They stuck to their main point. These drivers work for independent DSPs, not Amazon, so Amazon wasn't obligated to negotiate with the Teamsters. The article notes they also worked to reassure customers, you know, saying deliveries wouldn't be majorly impacted. They mobilized other resources, non-striking drivers, that kind of thing.
But even if Amazon said it was limited, the strike definitely got a lot of attention.
Oh, for sure. The article points out it made national headlines, sparked a ton of discussion online, really put a spotlight on Amazon's labor practices and that whole DSP setup. And it got various reactions, public and political. The report mentions support from some progressive elected officials, local leaders in the cities affected, calling on Amazon to negotiate. You had protesters showing up outside facilities, too. And while the article doesn't suggest a huge mass boycott, it does say some consumer groups called for temporary boycotts or delaying orders. Other labor unions also voiced support, seeing it as, you know, part of a bigger fight over these subcontracting models. We're just relaying what the source reported on these reactions.
And this whole question, who's the real employer, that brought in a big legal angle, didn't it?
A huge legal angle.
Yeah.
The question is whether Amazon, even with the DSP structure, acts enough like an employer to be considered one under labor law. That's the critical legal fight. The article highlights that labor law experts are really scrutinizing these setups, drawing parallels to fights in the gig economy, like with ride-sharing companies, where that independent contractor model has faced big legal challenges.
And was there a specific legal action mentioned in the source around the time of the strike?
Yes. The National Labor Relations Board, the NLRB, the federal agency that protects workers' rights to organize, they filed a complaint against Amazon. The complaint alleged Amazon engaged in unfair labor practices, specifically by failing to bargain in good faith with the union. Now, that's part of a legal process, not a final ruling, but the article notes it added significant weight to the Teamsters' claims, put more legal pressure on Amazon. Plus, their ongoing private lawsuits also challenging whether these drivers should legally be classified as employees instead of contractors.
So, this wasn't just happening in an Amazon bubble, though. The article suggests it caused ripples elsewhere, in the wider logistics world.
It certainly seemed to. The report notes other big companies that use a lot of subcontracted delivery labor, FedEx, Ground, and Instacart, are mentioned. Specifically, they apparently started reevaluating their own practices after the Amazon strike. It looks like maybe they were worried about similar organizing efforts or scrutiny coming their way.
So it basically poured fuel on that whole debate about this kind of employment model.
Exactly. It brought that fissured employment discussion back into the spotlight with real intensity. You know, this strategy where big companies push labor costs and responsibilities onto contractors, but still keep tight control over the actual work. The article suggests that if these legal challenges force Amazon to change how it deals with DSPs and drivers, it could set a huge precedent, not just for tech or delivery, but maybe across lots of industries using similar models.
And it sounds like it might have shifted public awareness a bit, too.
It seemed to. The article points out that for a lot of us, you order from Amazon, it shows up fast, and you don't really think about the mechanics behind it. The strike and the stories that came out really highlighted the human cost of convenience, as they put it. Advocacy groups use the moment to push for more transparency from Amazon, encourage people to think about the conditions behind their fast deliveries. Again, probably didn't cause a massive boycott, but it definitely made more people pause and consider the human side of that logistics chain.
Okay, so let's fast forward to where things stood according to the article, around early 2025. What was the status then?
As of early 2025, the source says there wasn't a big formal nationwide agreement between the Teamsters and Amazon covering all the DSP drivers.
Mm.
Not through direct talks, anyway. The article does note that apparently some individual DSPs made their own separate deals with their local drivers. But those bigger system-wide demands, union recognition for everyone, standardized conditions, those were still unresolved at the Amazon level.
And what about future plans? From the union or on the legal side?
The article suggests things were definitely still active. Labor advocates and the Teamsters were planning more organizing. The source specifically mentioned the Teamsters were possibly gearing up for more actions, maybe bigger ones, in the spring. Legally, that NLRB complaint about unfair labor practices was still working its way through the system. And those private lawsuits challenging the contractor status were ongoing too. Plus, the article notes some cities were looking at local laws to give gig workers more protection, which could also shake things up.
Okay. So, pulling this all together from the source material, what are the big takeaways from this deep dive into the Amazon strike?
Well, it really throws a few things into sharp relief, doesn't it? First, just how complex and frankly contentious that DSP model is, where you have centralized control but fragmented employment. Second, the very real, very difficult working conditions that fueled those driver demands. Third, that crucial legal fight over who really counts as the employer. And finally, the potentially huge implications this whole struggle has for the future of work, way beyond just package delivery. It could impact lots of industries using subcontracted labor.
Yeah, it really highlights that clash between the amazing efficiency and convenience we get from technology and these logistics models, and the challenge of making sure the labor involved is treated fairly. And it also shows, I think, the power collective action can still have, even in these workplaces that feel really fragmented and managed by algorithms.
And this whole situation, it really does raise an important question for all of us.
Yeah, it definitely makes you think hard about how those lines between employee and contractor are getting so blurry, especially in the digital economy. And you start wondering, what responsibility should big companies have for the people doing their core work, even if they're not direct employees, compared to what the law currently says they have to do?
And maybe, for you listening, as someone who gets those quick deliveries, it just prompts a moment to consider the human infrastructure behind it all, the people making that speed possible.
Definitely a lot to think about there.
And maybe consider this. How the outcome of these specific legal fights, these labor battles involving companies like Amazon, how that might ripple out. It might not just change how your packages get delivered. It could fundamentally reshape what employment even looks like in a whole range of modern industries that lean heavily on independent contractors. What could that mean for workers and for companies, say 5 or 10 years from now?